Is Ilu Nishma Sima Rachel Basar of Tzvi Aryeh Alei HaShalom. Oh, really? Wow. Unbelievable. Okay. Terrific. We're holding over here Parshas Achrim Mois Kedoshim. We have a double Parsha. So that means we have to divide our time over two Parshas. So we're going to try our best to get to much of Parshas Achrim Mois and at least some of Parshas Kedoshim. Most of the times when you have Achrim Mois Kedoshim, people focus on Kedoshim and not so much to Achrim Mois. But we're going to try to talk somewhat about Achrim Mois tonight as well. Parshas Achrima is just a general overall theme of what goes on in the Parshas. I break it down to three major events in Parshas Achrima. A good bulk of the Parsha of Achrima discusses Arayas, various people we're not allowed to live with. Illicit relationships is a good bulk of Parshas Achrima, as is a good bulk of Parshas Kedoshim, illicit relationships. A good bulk of Parshas Achrima also deals with the Avoida of the Kohen Gadol in the Beis HaMikdash for Yom Kippur. And then there's some other interesting sprinkles of halachas that are relevant about shechitas hakarbon, the mitzvah of kisei hadam, when a person shechs a animal, a certain type of animal, he covers the dam, chickens and things like that. And then the issur of shechutei chutz, shechting an animal in the wrong location. And then it takes us really to the beginning of the parsha. The beginning of the parsha is really a continuation from Parsha Shemini. We interrupted with Parsha Tazria Mitzayra, and we really are going back to Parsha Shemini. Let's remind ourselves, what happened to Parsha Shemini? Parsha Shemini was that tragic event of the passing of the two sons of Aaron, Nadav, Avihu, two great, great people. Again, we can't say that enough about them, and it's clear from many sources that this is the case. We spoke about this at length in Parsha Shemini, and it's still true today. They were great, great people, although they were taken from us and from Klal Yisrael at a relatively young age, before they were, deserving to die based on science and biological reasons, but they were taken for punishments. But the Torah tells us about Nadav Avihu's passing. Right after that, right post that occurrence, is the beginning of our parsha. V'yoyimur Hashem tells Moshe, Acherei Mois Shnei Bnei Aaron. Right after the passing of the two sons of Aaron, why did they die? Bikarvasam lifnei Hashem, they got too close to Hashem, vayamusu, and they died. So this line in the pasuk is very troubling to the Eben Ezra. Points at the Eben Ezra, one second. We know so many reasons of why Aaron's sons died. None of them was because they were karvasam lifnei Hashem. What does bikarvasam lifnei Hashem seem to mean? They went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. They went into the holiest of holies that's designated for only one person. One day of the year, only Aaron can go there on Yom Kippur. And that's where they went. So here the pasuk seems to be screaming to us, not what it says in Parashat Shemini, that they brought a foreign carbon, or like the Gemara tells us, they drank wine and went into work in the Beis HaMikdash, or they ruled in front of in the place of their Rebbe. It says, because of some of Nehashem, they got too close. So the Eben Ezra is very troubled by how to read this line in the pasuk. The Medrash points out in this pasuk, he says, why is it that every time we mention Nadav Avihu, there's always a reason in the Torah given for why they died? It's never just, the Nadav Avihu that we know already. Says the Medrash, because the Torah is telling you, do not think that for any other reason Nadav Avihu died. Don't saying, Nadav Avihu died because they were really in private bad people, and they did X and Y of error. No! Because whenever the Torah relays their death, there's always a reason given. You know why they died? Because they did X wrong. That implies X and nothing else wrong. So the Medrash tells us, don't make a mistake to think that they were, closet sinners. Not true. They were closet great people. They were all around great people. They had these averus, whatever they may be. But that's why the Torah always tells us why they passed. So the Eben Ezra is very troubled by this line of the pasuk. But the Torah continues. And this pasuk, the way we have it, doesn't seem to make too much sense. What happens over here? Hashem speaks to Moshe after Aaron's sons die because they got too close. What's the information that he's relaying? So what? What do you do? Moshe knew that. Aaron knew that. So the next pasuk, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Hashem tells the Moshe, Daber el Aaron achich. No. Don't just remind him that his children died. Give him an information. Now what? Tell him, Va'al yavoy b'chol eis al ha-kodesh. No, you Aaron, you got to be careful. You cannot fall into a trap like your sons did. They got too close. They went where they shouldn't go. You also should not do that. You are not supposed to go that close, except on Yom Kippur, the one day a year, you're allowed to go into the Kodesh HaKadosh. That's the flow of the Pesuk. So the Torah is reminding Aaron, HaKohen, Moshe is giving Aaron a commandment, do not fall into the trap of Nadav Avihu. Don't sin like they did. Rashi quotes a very interesting medrash over here, which is very important for educators. Rashi asks, what exactly is the purpose of the first pasuk? Says Rashi, "Hayir belozer ben azayir moishloi moshel." That this pasuk is giving us a moshel. Lachoyli have a sick person. Shenichnas eitzel reif. guy sick, he shows up to the doctor. So Amala, the doctor tells him, the doctor says, you want to get better? Don't eat cold food and don't sleep in cold areas. Okay, advice, medical advice. And then another guy comes and tells him, the secondary doctor tells him, don't eat this and eat that because I had a guy here last week who did that and he died. Says Rashi, who do you think the guy's going to listen to more? The first doctor who says, you know, don't do it? Or the second guy that actually made it very clear to him what happens? Says Rashi, the second doctor was much more Zoris. He was much clearer and blatant about it. Says Rashi, that's why the Torah goes out of its way and says, Aaron, be careful. Instead of just saying, Aaron, don't go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It says more than that. Don't go into Kodesh HaKadoshim like your sons did, and look what happened to them. So the Mefarshim point out that Rashi over here is teaching us a valuable lesson in education. When you want to give over a message or relay a message to someone, so sometimes it's nice to give them the facts. You know, don't do X, don't do Y, this. But when you bring it out in a much more clearer way, when you can show it and you see, look what happened. This is why in stories are so powerful when relaying a message. When a person connects the lesson to a story or to a mashal, it drums home the lesson that much clearer. That's what Rashi's telling us. That's why they didn't just tell Aaron, don't go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. He said, don't do like they did, because look what happened to them. So Rashi's giving us an educational lesson over here and how to give over messages in a way that they're heard, make it practical, show examples, give mashalim, give stories. Today, put it on a video screen, whatever it takes kids to learn. Make sure they get the message very clear.
So the
problem is, we'll talk a little bit more than the Siva Shalom tries to make this all work. This is a really big kasha. The Eben Ezra's kasha over here is a striking kasha about how does this work with what we know of in the other pshat. So we'll see, hopefully later, the Siva Shalom has an attempt to answer this up with a very beautiful understanding of human psyche. The Ramban points out over here that this all happened the day Aaron's sons died. The day Aaron's sons died, right away Hashem gives Aaron a kohen two statements. Don't drink wine, and don't go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. This all happened on that day. Point out the Ramban, so then why do we have Pashas Tarazir and Metzari in between? Because Hashem said, you know what, once I'm going to be giving the rules and regulations of that proper etiquette, let's give it to all of Klai Yisrael. This is a limited restriction. So we first opened up all Tarazir and Metzari to all the Jewish population, then we brought it back to individualized Aaron HaKohen. But says the Ramban, this really all took place on the day that this happened. We had a little break in between to focus on general rules, then we came back to specific. The Yeshua's Malkoi, Rabbi Yeshua Kotner, has a gevaldik avort over here in the Psukim. The first pasuk says, Achrei Mois, Shnei B'nei Aaron. After the passing of Aaron's two sons. So the Yeshua's Malka asks, he says, we know how many sons Aaron had who died. What's the significance of the number two? So he says beautifully, he says, one of the Gemaras tell us that the taina on the sons were that they weren't shoyel eitz zemizem. Nadav didn't ask Aviyu if what he's doing is a good idea, and Aviyu didn't ask Nadav. So now, what did they want to do? They each thought that they can be on the level of Kohen Gadol. Now, there's only one problem. You can only have one Kohen Gadol. So if Nadav would have asked Aviyu, said, you know, Aviyu, I want to be the Kohen Gadol. No, but I want to be the Kohen Gadol. Says Yeshua's Malka, if they would have asked each other, and they would have been Noitel Eitz Zemizeh, they would have never did what they did. Because they would have realized we both can't be the Kohen Gadol. So Zakti Yeshua's Malka, that's the Diyuk in the Pasuk. Achrei Mois Shnei. It's two. You can't have two Kohen Gadols. So if they would have asked each other or asked each other's advice before doing what they would have done, the casualty would have never happened. So points out Yeshua's Malkai, a very nice diuk from the number Shnei mentioned in the Pasuk. Rav Moshe Bikin, his Sefer Chayim Moshe, points out, similar to what we spoke about in Parashat Shemini, what exactly was the thinking of Nadav Aviyu? So he suggests the possibility that Nadav Aviyu were trying to follow Judaism as the Avos had Judaism. We spoke about this in Sefer Bereishis. The Avos' approach to Judaism was, we do as we think HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to do. Because the Avos didn't have a Torah. They weren't bound by the Torah. That's why Yaakov was allowed to marry two sisters. The Torah prohibits two sisters. Yaakov Avinu wasn't keeping the Torah as described by the Torah. He was doing what he thinks Ratzon Hashem is. Today we have rules of what Ratzon Hashem is. But that back then, the Avos did what they thought was Ratzon Hashem. What he calls Midas Atzmoi. They thought, this is what Hashem wants from me. So Nadav Aviyu thought Hashem wanted them to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Again, not a terrible flaw, but this was their attitude. Their attitude is, I want to serve Hashem Midas Atzmoi. So therefore, Zok the Pasuk, Aaron HaKohen, Don't do what your sons did. What did they do? They were being Oyved Hashem Mitoich Atzma. What they thought makes sense. You shouldn't do that. You have to follow the rules. And the rules are, you're not allowed to go into the Beis HaMikdash, into the Kodesh HaKodashim, more than I allow you. So therefore, the flaw of the Psukim is, Achrei Moy Shnei Aaron, what was the mistake of the Shnei B'nei Aaron? The Kervosom Lefnei Hashem. They got too close to Hashem because they thought that's what Hashem wanted of them. And then Hashem says, Aaron, but no, that's not the case. You follow my rules. Don't do what you think is right. You follow the rules that I'm going to lay out for you, which is, you're not allowed to go into the Kodesh HaKodashim. There's an unbelievable Yushalmi in the beginning of Maseches Yuma. Yushalmi points out, why is the beginning of Parshas Achrei Moy talking about the passing of Nadav Avihu, and right after that we get into the Seder Avodah of Yom Kippur. What's the smichus? Why did the Torah put the two together? To teach us that Misat Tzadikim is Mechaper, just like Yom Kippur. We all know that Rashi tells us to us in Sefer Bamidbar, why the Torah wrote the passing of Miriam next to the Parah Aduma, is to teach us that Misat Tzadikim is Mechaperis, like a carbon. Here the Yushalmi says that Misat Tzadikim is Mechaper, like Yom Kippur. Again, this is another Raya, that Nadav Avihu were tzaddikim. We call them tzaddikim, so therefore their passing is like tzaddikim. So the question is, how exactly does one understand this statement of the Yerushalmi? So the Meshech Chachma points out that Yom Kippur is only as chashiv as the value you give to it. Yom Kippur, for many non-religious Jews, is just another day on the calendar. They don't treat it with any kedusha. They don't use it to tap into its chashiva, so it is a meaningless day. Yom Kippur is not just a din, oh, it's Yud Tishrei on the calendar, so I'm the chaper. It's if you put in the work for Yud Tishrei. We have an entire 40 days of prep for Yom Kippur. It's not just a regular day. Says the Meshech Chachma, if you put in the work and give the value to Yom Kippur, then it's mechaper. Just like, says the Meshech Chachma, Misa Tzadikim. If a tzaddik dies and you never recognize him as a tzaddik, and you never gave him any chashivas, and you never gained from his life, so then his death is not a magic trick that you're mechaper. It's when you value what you lost, then it's going to be mechaper. What's stam zeh pshat and misa tzaddikim mechaper? So I always thought that pshat was, is when a tzaddik dies, is sometimes the first time you really get insight into his life. When you go to the Hespedim and now we have books and stories come out, many times when a tzaddik is alive, we don't know so much about him. It's only after he dies that we read about him and we hear, and that's when we get this service and we say, wow, this person walked among the same earth I walk. We're not talking about someone who lived 500 years ago. He lived in the same world I lived in. He lived yesterday. He was in my world. That's when this iris comes out and we say to myself, I can be better. That's one way of understanding it. The other way I understood it to mean is you say to yourself, there's a void in this world right now. This tzaddik was doing such great things in this world, and who's going to fill it? Someone has to fill it. So you kind of have to step up to the plate and fill the void that was left. People said that when Rabbi Avad Yosef was Nifter. Rabbi Avad Yosef learned so much Torah, learned so many hours. When these great Gedolim leave, who's going to fill that void? So everyone kind of has to be pushed to up their game, as we say. Fill that void. Who's going to be the next great Pesach, the next great leader? Who's going to be filling all that empty space of Torah that was filled by these Gedolim? So it's a Mechayef. But like the Meshech Chachma said, it's only going to get you as far as you view it. If you say, another tzaddik, another rebbe, that doesn't affect my life. So then it's not going to do anything for you. But if you take to heart what it meant, what is passing left, the void that it did, it's going to change your entire experience. Even with this past vision, it's the rebbe that died. I did not know him very well. He was 97 years old. I met a guy this week on the street, a friend of mine. He was giving me the whole rundown about the vision of the rebbe. He told me some great stories about the vision of the rebbe. I never knew. He told me that the vision of the rebbe said during one of the wars in Eretz Yisrael, he told his Talmidim that if you're not learning 16 hours a day, then you have to go to the army. Vishnitz Chassidus. He told him, if you're not learning 16 hours a day, then go to the army. Now, he didn't mean go to the front, take a gun, because you don't know what you're doing. It means you should be involved in the war effort. And the Cheshbon is very pashut, because we're doing our part in learning, and they're doing their part in the war. If you're not doing your part in learning, then you might as well go fight Api Derech HaTeva. That was one of the things he said. Now, no one knows about this because he never put it into writing because for political reasons and other reasons, it didn't become public. That's a fascinating statement. The Rebbe himself, until he was much older, he would learn something like 18 hours a day by himself. He would sit in a room and learn. So these stories only come out after he died, and now we hear these stories, but these are amazing stories about great people. So sometimes we need their Misa for us to get his iris from their life and say to myself, wow, I didn't realize this God will live amongst us, and he was a great person, and he did so much for Klai. So Misa Tzadikim has a power to be mechaper only if we tap in and we think about and appreciate what they gave to Klai Yisrael. There's a Medrash. The Medrash writes that Iyov, we know about from Sefer Shemois. Iyov was involved in the big meeting about how to deal with the Jewish problem in the times of Mitzrayim. So there was Iyov, Yisroi, and Bilam. So the Medrash tells us Eov was quiet. He got Yisurim forever. He was always, his life was difficult. Yisrael, who ran away, he merited to have Moshe Rabbeinu as a son-in-law and have that great legacy. So the Medrash says that Eov said to himself, after the story of Nadav Avihu, he said, uh-oh, I'm in big trouble now. Now I have what to be afraid of. So the question is, what's pshat in the Medrash? What does Nadav Avihu's passing have any impact on Eov's life? So the Chidos is a beautiful idea. He says, what does the Gemara tell us in Sanhedrin about Nadav Avihu? It says, Nadav Avihu were walking, and Nadav said to Avihu, I can't wait till those elderlies retire, meaning Maisha and Aaron, and we'll take over the Malucha. The Gemara never says what Avihu said back to Nadav. Avihu was just quiet. So Eov said to himself, one second, Nadav did the talking, and his brother just listened, and they both got punished. So what do you see from over here? That when you're sitting in a meeting, and you hear things that bother you, and you don't rebuke it, you get in trouble also. Eov said, now I'm in big trouble. Now I look back at that meeting when I was by Pharaoh, and Pharaoh discussed destroying, annihilating the entire population, and I was quiet. Uh-oh, now I'm going to have to deal with it. So therefore, Zakta Chida, that's the pshat in the matter. Very, very interesting pshat, but a very scary one as well. Many times we're in situations where we just figure, you know what, I'm just going to be quiet. But shtika kahida, when you're quiet and people are saying things that should bother you, and you're not moicha, and you don't stand up for what's right, that can also be held accountable against you. So therefore, Zakta Medrash, Eov was extremely nervous, he was worried, he was chared. The Pasuk says he was worried after this, what's going to happen to him. When the Pasuk describes the commandment that Hashem gives through Moshe to Aaron, he tells him, Daber el Aaron echicha. Go talk to Aaron, your brother, and tell him he's not allowed to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the Kliyaka points out, what's this Lashon Achicha, your brother? Well, you know, just say, go speak to Aaron. We know who Aaron is. Aaron and Moshe have been the team since the Sefer Shemais. So the Kliyaka has two pshatim. One pshat is don't let Aaron think to himself that he can bend the rules. He can get away with going into Kodesh HaKadoshim because he has his brother Moshe. His brother Moshe has so much chosim that his brother Moshe's chosim will help him get out of, jail free card. So the pasuk, no, it's not going to work. I know your brothers. I know that. But afal pi kein, you are not allowed to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That's one pshat. And the other pshat he writes is over here that Aaron could be very upset at this commandment. Because Moshe Rabbeinu has free reign in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. He was allowed to go in any time he wanted. And here Hashem tells him, you're not allowed to go. So he could have been very hurt by the fact that his brother has free reign. On that the pasuk says no. V'yeshayim says the Kliyaker. Afal pi shachichu b'nevuah, your brothers. You're both equal level, so to say, of Nevuah, but Moshe does have a free pass, and you do not. And Aaron took it well. Aaron understood it, that Moshe Rabbeinu has a different relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And as we find throughout the Chamishu Chamshei Torah, Aaron came to an appreciation of his brother. And they both appreciated each other for their greatness. There was no jealousy, there was no sibling rivalry, although here could have easily been, you have to remember, the Mishkan, that's Aaron's territory. That's what he's all about. He became the Kohen Gadol to have domination over this area. And here HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, yeah, not so fast. You don't have complete access, but your brother, who's the Levi, does have complete access. I think all of us would be highly insulted, very hurt. But Aaron took it and accepted Ratzon Hashem. That was the greatness of Aaron. He wasn't an egotistic person. That's why Aaron was able to be an Oyev Shalom. If you're an egotistical person, you're very hard to love other people because you're always worried about yourself first. The reason why someone can bring shalom and love all people is because you don't view yourself as greater than everyone else. If you view yourself greater than everyone else, you're not going to be a person that everyone loves because people can see through it. They see you only care about yourself. The reason why everyone loved Aaron is because he did not live for himself. He wasn't, I'm greater than all of you. Aaron knew his position, viewed his position, and did his position. Therefore, Aaron HaKohen was able to accept this, although most of us would have probably been very insulted, but he was able to accept the Ratzon Hashem. Then the Slan Merebbe and the Sefer Nesiv HaShalom asked the Kasha, and Mr. Freeman's very bothered by it, and I don't blame him. That's not what the Gemara says. It doesn't say that Aaron's children got punished because they went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It says they got punished, why? Either they drank wine, or they married Halacha B'fnei Rabban. Those are the two that Rashi quotes from the Gemara. So why all of a sudden now we have a new pshat? Very hard to understand. So Reb Steinman, in his Sefer, Yol Shachar, he kind of gets around this kasha by saying that the Pasuk is giving Aaron HaKohen an idea that don't go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. For whatever reason they got punished, you learn that when you go where you're not supposed to go, you get into trouble. Not so much that that's what they did wrong. Whatever they did wrong, fill in the pshat. But you, Aaron HaKohen, you can't go into Kodesh HaKadoshim. And the message is, don't do what you're not supposed to do, because your sons got punished for doing what they weren't supposed to do. Not that it's the same crime. Their crime was different. But it's the idea that there's rules and regulations here, and if you don't keep the rules, you're going to get into trouble. That's how he wants to get around the Eben Ezra's kasha. But the Nesim V'Sholem wants to explain, based on the Kliyaka. The Kliyaka says, why is it that the Kohen Gadol only went in once a year to the Kodesh HaKadoshim? So he says, because the power to go into Kodesh HaKadoshim comes from the power of the Klal. The Kohen Gadol's power was an intrinsic power because he was special. It was because he was an agent acting on behalf of Klal Yisrael, the greater Am Yisrael. The problem is Klal Yisrael is not always as great as we like to believe we are, except on Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, we're angels. Literally, when Nidme Kamalachim. So on Yom Kippur is the only time that Aaron can feel comfortable going in to the Beis HaMikdash as an agent of Klal Yisrael, because then all Klal Yisrael is taka doing what they're supposed to do. They're on the level. Says the Nesiv Shalom, he believes that the mistake of Nadav Avihu was one themed mistake. The mistake was they thought they were greater than Klal Yisrael. They thought they were above everyone else. They had their own level of Kedusha. That's why he says, that's why they were Mayur Halacha B'fnei Rabbi. Because I'm better. Again, without putting them down, Chas V'Shalom, they thought they were a Madrega above it. They had their own rules and regulations. That's why they never got married. Everyone talks about this. Why didn't they get married? They didn't get married because they thought there's no one greater, no one's on their level to be able to be Meshadach with. They're a different playing field. When you're in a different playing field, you're taking away from being part of Klal Yisrael. Then you have no right to get into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That was their mistake. The mistake was they thought that they're in a different, they're in an independent group of people, and they were. They were Choshev people. But when you start to think you're no longer part of the greater group, you lose the Koyach to succeed as being part of the group. Therefore, says the Nesiv HaSholem, the mistake was really, when you go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim with that attitude of, I'm at a different playing field, that's why you're going to not be, that's why you're going to be Mary Halacha with their Rabbi. Why would someone rule Halacha in front of their Rabbi? Because they think they're on a different level. That's why they didn't get married. They're on a different level. They're not part of regular Klal Yisrael. Therefore, he said that was the idea of going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It was the idea of trying to reach a different level without being part of the Tzibur. If a person wants to reach, you know, perfection, as much as he'd like to, it only works when you're part of the Tzibur. So these great people were trying to reach a level that was beyond them. We find a similar idea when it comes to the Talmidei Reb Akiva. Chazal tell us, the Gemara Yevam says the Talmidei Reb Akiva died during this time because they weren't covered zealous, they didn't show proper respect to each other. So everyone speaks out that this doesn't obviously mean that they, you know, kicked each other and hit each other. It means that on their level, they had to be a perfect generation because they were the generation to be Moiseh Torah to the next generation. When you're in that type of role of being Mesiris HaTorah, you have to be perfection. And they missed a little bit of perfection. For us, you know, we can't even imagine how Levi we should reach there, Madrega of Loi Nogo Kav Zelzeh. But for them, for what they needed to reach, there needs to be a perfection. So too, when a person is trying to reach a level of perfection, that you want to be, you know, this Madrega, so then the little mistakes that you make are held much stronger against you. So here also says the Siva Shalom, that was the taina of Aaron's children. Obviously they were great, terrific people, but when you're trying to reach perfection, the slightest infractions are held against you. Rav Moshe Sternbach points out that the problem, why couldn't Aaron go into Kodesh HaKadoshim every day? He says something which we all realize in our own lives. He says that when you do something all the time, the Kedusha and the Chashivas eventually wears off. If Aaron would be allowed to go into Kodesh HaKadoshim every single day of the year, even Aaron HaKohen, the great Aaron HaKohen, would be affected by routine. And the longer you do something, the more frequently you do it, it loses that chashivas. And this is true for us in shul, right? We go to shul every single day, three times a day. So we lose the chashivas that a shul is something chashiv. Right? My wife always asks me, she doesn't, how can men talk in shul? I said, I'll tell you why. It's because we do this every single week. We do this three times a day. And it becomes routine. You don't think to yourself, I'm actually standing in a makom kodesh. If Aaron, says the Rav Moshe Sternbach, if Aaron HaKohen would go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim every single day, eventually he would view the Kodesh HaKadoshim not because anyone's bad, it's just that's how routine affects our life. You know, everyone knows when you put on tefillin for the first time when you're 13 is not how you put on tefillin when you're 45. It's a whole different experience because routine has a negative effect on us. It takes away from the chashiv, it takes away from the sensitivity, it removes that beauty that you have when you do something on a rare occasion. Therefore, he says that was the pshat when it came to Aaron's going into the Kodesh HaKadosh. Again, we're talking about Aaron HaKohen. The great Aaron HaKohen would have also have fell to this mistake of routine, and that's why he was limited to going to the Kodesh HaKadosh. Other Achrayim also point out that it sounds like from the Pasuk that Aaron HaKohen needed to be scared with the passing of his two sons. Right? We're talking about Aaron HaKohen over here. You had to scare Aaron and say, listen, be careful, because if you cross that line, you're going to get punished like your kids. We're talking to Aaron HaKohen. So the Mefarshim said, you see from over there that the desire to get into the Kodesh HaKadoshim was very strong. Not because Aaron got credit for going to Kodesh, it was this she'ifus to reach greatness, to get this dabkus to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It was this desire to get into the holiest of areas than being close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which many times you need to be brought back, you know, and said, no, this is not right, don't go there. So Aaron HaKohen needed to be somewhat scared or shooken up by hearing that, no, you don't belong there. Because other than that, he would have wanted to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim just to be able to attach himself to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Torah goes on and discusses the Avodas Yom Kippurim. We're not going to talk too much about it. We're not going to talk really at all about it. But I do want to talk about one pasuk later on. The pasuk talks about the mitzvah of Kisui Adam, to cover the blood after one does Shechita. So Rav Pam has a beautiful piece in his Sefer on Chumash where he calls him the Beis HaLevi. The Beis HaLevi says that there's rules and regulations about how to do Kisui Adam. You're not allowed to kick it with your foot. You're not allowed to do it in a derech mevuzah. You're not allowed to make mitzvahs mevuzah. So the Beis HaLevi said that when a person goes collecting for tzedakah, and we have this all the time, people come asking us for money. So the Beis HaLevi said that those tzedakah collectors are cheftze shel mitzvah. Salvation style. Cheftze shel mitzvah. They themselves are like a dvar mitzvah. The same way you're not allowed to be mevaza dvar mitzvah. No one would take an esrog and throw it against the wall. You're not allowed to be mevaza cheftze shel mitzvah. And he said a cheftze shel mitzvah, someone's going around collecting tzedakah. You look at him as a schnorr trying to get a dollar out of you. So the Beis HaLevi, he's a cheftze shel mitzvah. He embodies a mitzvah, the mitzvah of giving tzedakah. So the Beis HaLevi, and Rav Pam brings this out, that we have to be somewhat sensitive to these people that are collecting, because they're a vessel of mitzvah. Giving them a dollar is a fulfillment of a mitzvah. We look at them as, you know, people who, you know, we're all fatana, why don't they get a job, why don't they do what we did, and we make money, why don't they make money? We don't know their stories. I always say this over, a friend of mine told me, that he once had a guy came collecting, and he told the fellow, he said, instead of collecting, I'll give you a job. The guy said, you'll give me a job? He said, I own tons of factories. I don't need your money. So he said, why are you collecting? He said, because I'm a Satmar Chassid. The Satmar Rebbe had a policy that he sent the biggest gevirim to be the collectors in the shuls. Why? Because he wanted to work on their gaiva. And you own a lot of factories and you're a big gevir, so you get a little keichi v'oitim yadi. You put a guy in the shul and go around collecting, it brings you back to reality really fast. So first of all, you don't even know who you're collecting for. You don't even know if they could be very successful people and did very well for themselves. And they're doing it. I met a fellow once came collecting in my house. And he told me, he said, I'm not collecting for myself. I have parnasa. I do very well for myself. I feed my family fine. I'm collecting for a friend of mine. So he told me. It's a whole different outlook. And let's say Imtim Tzloimer, it's like a guy who needs it for himself. Does that mean he's a bad person? Does that mean that he did something wrong? He's having a difficult time, so we try to help him. The best way of looking at it is, you'd rather be on your side than on his side. You'd rather be the giver than the recipient. That's for sure. So says the Beis HaLevi, look at him like any other object of a mitzvah. Make believe he's an esrog. Make believe he's a peretz tefillin. You wouldn't kick a peretz tefillin. You wouldn't throw a peretz tefillin. So why would you do that to someone who's collecting stock? So therefore says the Beis HaLevi, the same way we saw Machmed had to do Kisei Adam. We're talking about blood and dirt. Nothing of in our minds is chashivas. The answer is, of course it's chashiv, because it's mitzvahs. So we have to look at these people as cheftzah shel mitzvahs as well, and treat them with the proper covet we would to any other mitzvah. Then the Torah moves on to Perek Yud Ches. Perek Yud Ches, I believe, and this is found in Parashas Kedoshim as well, is where the Torah is giving us very, very important advice of how to live in society amongst people that are not like us. We as Jews are going to be, and we were, exposed to Mitzrayim. Then we move into Eretz Canaan and we're exposed to the Canaanim. And throughout history, we're constantly being exposed to people who live around us and are different than us, significantly different than us. Mainly, their morality is different than the morality of a Jew. And the pasuk tells us, Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu, tell the Jewish people, first thing is, Ani Hashem Elokeichem. They have to remember that I am Hashem, their God. They answer to me. They don't answer to anyone else. I don't care what country they're in. I don't care where they're living. I'm the boss. Ani Hashem Elokeichem. Rashi speaks this out. I am the one who told them, everything's about me. Let's not lose sight. Wherever you're going to live, whoever you're going to see, whoever you're going to be exposed to, let's remember, numero uno, so to say, Kadosh Baruch Hu is Ani Hashem. Now what? K'maisi Eretz Mitzrayim Ashei Shavtim Bo Lo Yisasu. Don't pick up bad habits from the Mitzrayim that you were exposed to for so many years. U'k'maisi Eretz Canaan. And don't pick up bad habits from the Canaanim that I'm going to bring you there also. You're going to be surrounded and exposed to bad people. Don't learn from their actions. Don't pick up from what you see from the people around you. Make sure you understand that you are different. You have a different set of rules, regulations, moral conduct, moral behavior. Don't learn from there. I heard a share from Rabbi Leibowitz. He points out that what is the difference between Eretz Mitzrayim and Eretz Canaan? What was the attitude of Mitzrayim versus the attitude of Eretz Canaan? And he suggests that Eretz Mitzrayim's flaws were ben Adam lechaver. He doesn't make too many riots, but he makes the argument that Eretz Mitzrayim, what was wrong with the Mitzrayim? Obviously, they didn't believe in God. But the way they acted with the Jews is just a breach in person-to-person relationships. If you can take innocent babies and throw them into an ocean, and you can take people and slaughter them and bathe in their and bathe in their blood, you're lacking in basic human ben Adam lechaveroi. Forget being Jewish. You don't know how to live with another person. You don't know how to live with another human being who's different than you. So he says that the Eretz Mitzrayim is a representation of ben Adam lechaver. What was Eretz Canaan? Eretz Canaan was ben Adam lamok. Why? He said, because Eretz Canaan, they were exposed to spirituality. They had the obvious. Shame and Aver, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, they were the biggest mekarvim. They all could have been religious or Jewish. They chose not to. They chose to reject all religious life. So that's been Adam Lamak. So the Pasuk is warning us that you're going to come across different types of groups that have different flaws. Some of their flaws are ben Adam Lachaveri. They don't know how to live with another person in a society. Don't learn from them. And then you're going to come across people that have religious problems. How they react to God. The movement of not believing in a God. Or having titans on a God. That you also shouldn't learn from. So he's giving us both extremes of life. Those that are interpersonal relationships. Those that are spiritual relationships. Don't pick up any of those bad habits. You just follow Hashem the way Hashem teaches us. And the pasuk goes on. And it tells us, you keep my rules. My Torah is what you should follow. Because ani Hashem. And the Torah repeats itself. Keep my laws and keep my judgment. You do what I says. So Rav Bik explains that what the pasuk is telling us over here is, it's not talking about do the mitzvahs. Of course you're going to do the mitzvahs. The pasuk is saying, what are you going to do when you're doing the exact same thing as the guy? You're going to work the same way the guy goes to work. You're going to work your field like the guy works his field. On that, the Torah says, your interaction in the world should be very different than the guy's. You're going to work. Any mundane activity that you're doing should be different than the guy's. Of course, when you're learning Torah and davening, you're going to be different than the guy. But it's the mundane activity, says Rav Bik, that has to show the difference. When you go to work, you go to work like a yid. When you go to play ball, we tell things, when you play ball like a yid. Whatever you do like a yid. That's a whole different way of doing things. That's what the Torah is warning us. It's not warning us that when we're going to be sitting in shul, we shouldn't daven like the Christians. It's bigger than that. It's when we're going outside and we're going to walk with them and we're going to have to interact with them and we have to do business with them. We should do business like a Jew. That's what the Torah is being mitzav us. To make sure that our interactions is a totally different experience than it goes. You could see a Jew from a mile away. You should be able to point out a Jew's activity, his anhaga, his interpersonal relationship, and that's the hakpadas ha-Torah. But we're seeing from the Torah over here is that the Torah knows we're going to be exposed to people that are going to impact our lives. And the Torah is giving us a system of realizing, this is what many Gedolim have spoken about, what we call Yiddish shtolz. We have to realize we're better than them. Why am I bringing myself down to be like the guy on the street? I'm better than him. I'm a child of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. I am from a higher level of lineage. Why do I want to be like this lowlife? So I think they quote from Yaakov Enden. Yaakov Enden says that's the problem with all the Jews. We don't have Jewish gaiva. We always want to be like the goyim. Why do we want to be like them? We're better than them. We're ben malachim. Why do we want to dress like them, talk like them, and act like them? We're so much better than them. It's like a prince trying to be like one of the common folks. He doesn't. He's better than that. He acts differently. He dresses differently. He talks differently. It's a whole different lifestyle. So Yaakov Emden used to say that the Yidden have to realize that we're different. Why do we want to be like them? Zok to Torah, you're going to be exposed to them. We can't live in a ghetto our whole life and not see the goyim around us. But we have to realize we're better than them. And we're not going to live the life that they live, and we're not going to behave the way they do. We're going to live a whole different lifestyle. And then the Torah ends off at four very important words. V'chai b'hem. Live with this. Ani Hashem, because I am Hashem. So we all know that this pasuk is a very famous pasuk. This is a source in halacha that you're not supposed to die to serve Hashem. V'chai b'hem means Hashem says, I want you to keep my mitzvah when you're alive. You can't do too many mitzvahs when you're not alive. So the chai behem zok the Torah means even if your life is threatened, you should not give up your life because we need you to do mitzvahs. So the problem with that is, the next set of psukim talks about arayas. Arayas is actually one of those things you're supposed to give up your life for. You're supposed to die for it. So why would the Torah write it over here if the next list of mitzvahs or all the next asurim are all the things that you actually do have to give up your life for? So the Chassam Sofer asks this kasha, others ask the kasha, but Rashi and Chumash does not say that. Rashi and Chumash says, v'chai behem, Zok Rashi, lo'olam haba. The pasuk doesn't mean for this world. This world, forget this world. Lo'olam haba. The chayba means you're living for the next world. So everyone talks about how exactly do we make these two pshatim. One pshat v'chayba means you're supposed to give up your life. One pshat v'chayba means olam haba. Well, which one is it? So it's hard to know. So some people say v'chayba means give up your life and everything except for arayis. When it comes to arayis, you give up your life, so then it means olam haba. Rabbi Fran quotes from Rav Moshe that Rav Moshe explains that the reason why we don't give up our life is goofy because that the Torah is our life. If you look at the Torah and you say, my life is here to serve Hashem, so why would you give up your life to serve, to not to be able to do mitzvahs? Your whole purpose here in this world is you're living for mitzvahs. That's the V'chai Bahem. My life's purpose and my essence in this world is to do mitzvahs. That's why if a guy puts a gun to your head, you say, no, I'm not going to die. I need to live. Because I'm living just to do Hashem's will. That's goofy why it's not Deicher Yarug Val Yav. Then the Torah gives us a whole list of illicit relationships. You can't live with this person, you can't live with that person. Okay. And then all of a sudden in the middle, the Torah drops the topic and talks about something which is very hard to understand. The parasha called Moilach. What was Moilach? Jewish people would give up their children to be killed for the sake of Avodah Zarah. In the middle of all this illicit relationship, the Torah says, "And umizaracha leisitin lahavala moilach, don't give your child up to moilach, and don't profane Hashem's name." And then the Torah continues about all continuous illicit relationship. There's zacha. Then the Torah talks about living with a man, and it talks about living with an animal. Continues on. So many mefarshim are bothered. Why the break in discussing illicit relationships to start talking about sending your child to moilach? So Reb Chaim Kanevsky says it's teaching us an important halach. After the Torah talks about Moilach, it talks about living with an animal and living with a man. Both those relationships you can't produce a child from. The first group of Arayis, living with various relatives, you can't produce a child. The child is called a mamzer, but you can produce a boy. So you might say to yourself, oh, you know what? I wasn't supposed to live with this woman, and I had a baby. Oh, this baby Hashem doesn't care about. Let me pass the baby up to Moilach. The next group, you're not going to be able to produce a baby from, so the Torah is not talking about it. Says Reb Chaim Kanevsky, the Torah is teaching me that even a baby that's born b'psul, the baby's a mamzer. You're still not allowed to give them up to Moilach. That's where the Torah stopped and gave you a recap. All these are illicit relationships that you can produce a baby from. Still, do not give that baby up to Moilach. The Targum Yonasan ben Uziel on that pasuk says a very big chiddush in this pasuk. You know what the pasuk means? Says the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel. It doesn't mean don't give your baby into a fire for avodah zarah. The pasuk means something very different. I'll read you his words. I don't have it in this chumash. The Targum Yonasan ben Uziel says it means don't allow your son to marry a non-Jew. Why? Says the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, if you allow your son to marry a non-Jew, you're producing another generation that will be idol worshippers. Because if your son marries a non-Jew, the children are not Jewish, they're going to be Erev Adizar. The Torah is prohibiting a person from ensuring that his children and future generations do not stay on the Torah path. That's including the prohibition of Moilach. There's only one problem. There's a Mishnah in Megillah Daf Chafei, where Rashi says, if you say that's part of the Pasuk, we quiet you, because that's not what the Pasuk means. That's a strong question of the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, that Rashi Megillah Daf Chafei says that's not the understanding of the pasuk. Nonetheless, the Moser Haskel that the Chafetz Chaim took from this drasha was you see the responsibility that a parent has when educating and guiding their child. They have to make sure they give their children the ability to want to and ultimately continue the Messiah that they gave. That they'll want to marry Jewish women and continue the legacy of having Jewish children instead of Chas V'Shalom pushing your children in a way where they're going to want to marry out of the fold, so to say. And the Chafetz Chaim used to tell people when they would send their children, we're talking about obviously not like today, but when you would send your children to institutions that can lead them astray from Torah, he says that's a violation of L'Seitan B'nai L'Moilach. Because you're setting your child up for going against the Messiah, the traditions that we have. So again, we're reoccurring this theme in the Parsha of when you set up and when you expose yourself to people that are not like you, you're not going to change them. They're going to change you. They're going to win and you're going to lose. So don't do it. Don't get caught up in the nations around you. Don't get exposed to the nation. Don't put your children in societies and environments where they might not follow the Torah way. The Chafetz Chaim thought that was included in the prohibition of giving your child to Moilach. What exactly was this Moilach Avodah Zarah? Such a crazy idea. Why would anyone do this? So the Ramban writes that every single time a person did Moilach, not only did he do an Aveira of Avodah Zarah, as the Pasuk says, he was Mechalol Shem Shemayim. What was the Chilol Shem Shemayim? Says Reb David Kviat in the Sefer Sukkos David, look at the statement you're making. When it comes to bringing Karbonis to Hashem, you give Hashem an animal. Now, an animal has value. It was very valued, but it's not your kid. So to Hashem, you give him your animal. To the Avodah Zarah, you give him your child. Said Reb David Kriya, that's a Chilul Hashem. The statement you're making is, my Avodah Zarah is more valuable than my God, my Hashem. To my Hashem, I'll give you my object. I'm not going to give you my son. My son's precious. But to the stupid Avodah Zarah, whatever it's me, I'm going to give you my son. So he said, every time you did Moilich, you made a huge Chilul Hashem. Says Reb David Kriya, although Baruch Hashem today we don't give our kids L'moilech, he says, but we fall to this trap all the time. How many times do we give more value to other things than we do to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How many times do people value physical things in this world and they don't value spiritual things? How many times does a person say, I don't have enough money to do a mitzvah or to give to a mitzvah, but I have enough money to give to mundane, non-spiritual, physical things in this world? Says Reb David Kriya, that's really a form of moilech. It's not the real moilech, but it's the Moser Hasker of moilech. It's saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you, nah. But for everything else, I have the time, I have the money, I have the resources for everything else on the world. But for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no, I don't have enough time, I don't have enough money, I don't have the resources, I can't give to Hashem. But when everything else needs my time, then I do. So points out David Kriya, a very, very valuable Moser Haskel, that although today, Baruch Hashem, we don't do moilech, but we're really falling into the same trap of moilech, we're really falling for the idea of moilech, we're putting our personal or physical things instead of valuing of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, His Torah and His mitzvahs. And that's really how Parashas Achri Mois ends, with the realization of valuing Kedusha, valuing spirituality, and staying far away from anything that brings you away from spirituality. And then the Torah tells us, and the Ramban points this out, a specific prohibition of bringing chilul, lack and breach of Kedusha, to Eretz Yisrael. The Ramban writes about this extensively, that there's no room in Eretz Yisrael for chilul. And the Pasuk says, The nations of the land did this in Eretz Yisrael, and they made it tamei. I don't want the land to spit you out. Eretz Yisrael is kedushas haaretz. It can't handle tuma. It's repulsed by it. So the Ramban writes, in Eretz Yisrael we have an extra hakpada to keep tahara, to keep kedusha, because we have to be so much more careful, because Eretz Yisrael itself is a mokim kaddish. Therefore, we have to be extra careful in Eretz Yisrael about our interactions because of the kedusha tzaris. And that's the way Parashat Achri Mois ends, with the importance of realizing, stay away from that is bad, and embrace that is good, and grow closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that way. And then we open up with Parashat Kedoshim. A very famous beginning of Parashat Kedoshim, the Torah gives me a commandment of be holy. Kedoshim tiyu, be holy. What exactly does it mean to be holy? So the famous machloek is Rashi and the Ramban. Rashi learns the way you're holy is by not doing arayis. If you sit in your house and you don't live with women you're not supposed to, you get a check for the mitzvah of kedoshim tiyu. The Ramban says no, it means shaloi tehi novel b'rishos hater. This is every mashkiach and every yeshiva's, you know, drasha. Don't indulge in those things that are permissible. Which means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a lot of things in this world that we're allowed to have. A lot of things that have beautiful hashkachas, and they have a lot of hashkachas. That doesn't mean you should indulge and spend your entire life running after permissible, kosher, frum, things that you're allowed to eat, but your life shouldn't be a gashmias type of life. That's the Ramban's understanding of novel b'rishos hater. But I saw a beautiful pshat in the Torah's Kedoshim to you. What is it right after Kedoshim to you? It gives you a whole list of mitzvahs. Honor your parents, keep Shabbos. You know how you become a Kaddish? Spirituality is not a feeling. We live in a world today that many people feel spiritual. Now, it doesn't mean I do anything, I just feel it. I get this ayur by feeling it. Zog to tell you that spirituality is not a feeling. It's a lifestyle. You know how you feel Kedoshim to you? By keeping my mitzvahs. That's how you become holy. You don't become holy by talking about being holy and feeling holy and walking around in this aloof attitude. You do mitzvahs. That's how you become holy. Keep my mitzvahs, and then Kosh Baruch gives you the list. Do what you're supposed to do. That's a fulfillment of Kedoshim to you. The first mitzvah that we have in this week's parasha, Parashat Kedoshim, is Ish Imoy Vaviv Tiro. The biblical responsibility to honor one's parents. So the Ksav Sofer writes, why did the Torah say the word Ish, a man, should honor his parents? So the Ksav Sofer says, Ish usually gives off the impression of Chashivas. You have a fellow who made a pig. He's successful. He worked on himself. So he said to himself, I don't have time for Kibbutz Avayim. I'm beyond that. So the Torah, Ish, no, I know that. You were very successful. You did really well for yourself. And you're a very respected member of society. You still have a mitzvah of Avivim Oitiro. That doesn't change. Although you made it big, people think, oh, Kibbutz Avayim is only when you're a small child. No, ish. You made it big. Still you have a mitzvah of aviv imay tiro. Says the Torah, why does it say that a person should fear his father? I'm sorry, says the pasuk, why does it say ish imay tiro? So Rashi says, afisha goli lefonav shaben yeris aviv. We know, by teva, a child fears his father more, because he's afraid of him. So that's why the Torah went out of its way and said, no, ish imay, put the mother first. So says Rabbi Rucham Levavis, you see the Torah is teaching us that we are born with certain tendencies as human nature. That's not an excuse. We have to overcome that and do what Hashem wants. Because the Torah is telling me, normally you're going to fear your father first. So you just say, okay, leave it the way it is. That's nature. Zakh the Torah, no, you got to go out of nature. You have to rewire yourself. Because that's the Ratzon Hashem. Says Rabbi Rucham Levavis, it's not only for this mitzvah, it's for all mitzvahs. Our job is to take our teva that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us, and go beyond it, and go against nature, or go out of our comfort zone, and do what's beyond our normal tendency to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rashi's bothered with why did the Torah put the mitzvah of Shabbos next to the mitzvah of honoring your parents, to teach me that although it's very important to honor your parents, but if your parents ask you to disgrace the Shabbos, you're not allowed to listen. So everyone has a kasha, of course you're not supposed to listen. First of all, if your father's a Rashi, you don't have to listen to him. If your father tells you something which is not correct, you don't have to listen to him. Secondly, if your father tells you not to do any mitzvah, you're not supposed to listen to him. So why specifically Shabbos? So the David Meshurim, the Chabina Rav, who was the Rav in Chabin, first in Poland and survived the Holocaust and moved to Eretz Yisrael. It's interesting, we all know him today as the Chabina Rav. The Chabina Rav never wanted to be a Rav. He never wanted to take money from Rabbanus. He wanted to just sit and learn. Actually, his wife at those years had her own business, which was a big chiddush in those years. His wife owned a coal business. She made a lot of money. She was very successful. So he never took a rabbinic position. He just sat and learned the whole day. He didn't want to be nene from the rabbanis. And then her business failed, so he had to become a rav. So he became the Chabina Rav. But he never wanted to be a rav. But we know him today as a David Misharim, the Chabina Rav. So he comes over to Lom de Shechab. He says, if your father asks you to be Mechal Shabbos, do you really want to be Mechal Shabbos? Of course not. You're only doing it to make him happy. There's a halacha that melocha shein tzricha l'gufa potim. If you do an act on Shabbos, not for the purpose of the outcome, but for another reason, it's machloikis in the Gemara, whether or not you're really held accountable. So said the Chabina Rav, you would have thought, if your father comes over to you and says, turn on the light switch on Shabbos. You don't want to turn on the light switch. You don't want the light. You're just doing it to make your father happy. So maybe that's not really aser. That's a melocha shein tzricha l'gufa. Maybe you should listen to your father. And that says the Torah, no, still don't listen to your father. The Chidah comes up with another chap. He says, what happens if your father tells you to be mechal Shabbos? So you say, what do you mean? But you have to listen to Shabbos. You're not allowed to listen to your father if he's a Russian. He says, who says your father's a Russian? Maybe we're talking about a case where the father and the son, one made early Shabbos and one made late Shabbos. So you tell your son to be Mechal Shabbos, it's not Shabbos for you. You're making late Shabbos. Your son made early Shabbos. So they come up with these creative pshatim into why one would think that they don't have to listen in such a case because it's different rules and regulations. Just to end off, in the end of... Continuing on in the parasha, there's a lot of mitzvahs in Parashas Kleim, a lot of very geshmak and important mitzvahs in Parashas Kleim. But in the middle of the psukim, the Torah writes, again, Eshabsoi se tishmeru, guard my Shabbos, umikdashi tiro, and keep my mikdash, fear my mikdash. So Rashi says again, it teaches me that although the base of mikdash was very important, you're not allowed to build the base of mikdash on Shabbos. So I saw a pshat, the Gemara tells us that if Klal Yisrael would have kept the Shabbos, two Shabbosim, the Mashiach would have came. That's the pasuk. As Shabsoi say, Tishmairu, if you're going to guard my Shabbos, Umikdashi Tiro, then you're going to have a base of Mikdash. So if we were to keep the Shabbos properly and show the proper respect to Shabbos, then we would attack and get a base of Mikdash. So there's actually a connection between the two things of Mikdashi Tiro, keeping the Shabbos, because in the schus of keeping Shabbos, we'll actually have the right to be Mikdashi Tiro. Just to end off, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky used to explain that in the world we live in today, we don't tend to honor our parents or our grandparents. The new movement today is that the younger you are, the cooler you are, the smarter you are, the better you know how to use a smartphone, we honor them more than we do the elder generation. So Rabbi Yaakov used to say that's because they have a backward way of looking at it. We look at the previous generation, they were that much closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They were that much closer to Har Sinai, that much closer to the Messiah. They have the authentic version. We're so far away from it. So he quotes from Rabbi Chanan Wasserman. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman said that if Darwin, who thinks we all came from monkeys, if he would have seen the Chafetz Chaim, he would have known for sure we don't come from monkeys. The problem is they have this attitude that if your starting point is an animal, so then you want to get far away from that as possible. Our starting point is Kedusha. the greater generation before us. We want to get closer to them. So they were that generation. So he said in the name of Rabbi Chanan, that if Darwin, he writes this in the Sefer, if Darwin would have thought of Chavetz Chaim, he would have never thought that humans come from monkeys. And that's the chashivas that we showed to the previous generation, because they're closer to the authentic Judaism. They're closer to the Messiah. They saw real greatness. We talk about it. They saw it. Every generation that gets closer and closer to Har Sinai, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to Nisim ben Aflois, and that's why we as Jews honor previous generations, as opposed to the Goyim that value the current generation.